Later on, we're going to be looking in Isaiah chapter 61. So I'm going to read the passage now. I'll be reading from Isaiah 61, and I'll do verses 1 to 9. And then I'll read from Luke chapter 4. So if you've got a Bible with you, you might want to stick your fingers in those two verses, these two chapters. So it's Isaiah 61 and Luke chapter 4. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations. Aliens will shepherd your flocks, foreigners will work your fields and vineyards, and you will be called priests of the Lord, and you will be named ministers of our God. You will feed on the wealth of nations, and in their riches you will boast. Instead of their shame, my people will receive a double portion. Instead of disgrace, they will rejoice in their inheritance. And so they will inherit a double portion in the land, and everlasting joy will be theirs. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and iniquity. In my faithfulness, I will reward them and make an everlasting covenant with them. Their descendants will be known among the nations, and their offspring among the peoples. All who see them will acknowledge that they are people the Lord has blessed. And then over into Luke chapter 4. And this is starting at verse 14. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He taught in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." Then he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him, and he began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Well, if you've kept your fingers in the Bible, we're back to Isaiah chapter 61. I understand this is part of a series you're following, so I won't spend too much time in going back over the context and the situation, but you're probably familiar that Isaiah is talking to a people who are in trouble. They thought they were the people of God. They thought that God had particularly blessed the nation, and they thought that God lived in Jerusalem. So how was it that a pagan, violent, oppressive nation were able to come in, attack Jerusalem, take the city, leave it in ruins, and take the people of God away from God's land into a foreign land? They must have felt despair. And Isaiah is talking to those who are left in Jerusalem and those who are in the Babylonian captivity and saying, God is still God. God is still in charge of the nations in this world. And he points to a Messiah who will come. And this Messiah is God's servant who will bring in God's kingdom. But the servant was slightly different, maybe, from what some of them were expecting. And we see throughout the book of Isaiah pictures, images, impressions of who and what this Messiah will be like. If you go back to chapter 42, he's described as a servant. And in that very well-known chapter, in chapter 53, it's a suffering servant. A servant not only who comes to serve, but comes to suffer. And then in Isaiah chapter 61, where we've reached, we see the blessings that the servant will bring, the blessings that the Messiah will bring to God's people. And so, when Jesus stood up in Nazareth and said, that image, that picture of the Messiah, that is me. I love the way that Luke describes it. He says, Jesus sat down. So he sat down ready to teach. It doesn't mean he's given up. Usually people would sit down ready to teach. So he's done the reading. He sits down ready to teach. And everyone is looking at him. So they know that passage is about this promised Messiah. The tension must have been great. And every eye was fastened on him. And what does he say? He says, that prophecy is about me. That's an incredible claim. Next slide, please. But that is the claim that Jesus makes. Jesus is the Messiah. And through these verses, we're going to be looking at what Jesus the Messiah is like, and maybe what that means for us today. Not just for the people in Isaiah's time, not just for the people in Jesus' time, but for us today. Because often, prophecy, as you read the Old Testament in particular, prophecy about the Messiah is fulfilled at different times and in different ways. So maybe some of it is fulfilled in the time of Israel, the people that Isaiah was talking to. Them and maybe their children or their grandchildren would see the prophecy fulfilled. Some of those prophecies would be fulfilled when the Messiah came, when Jesus walked on the earth. And some of those prophecies will be fulfilled when Jesus returns to come to gather up his people and create the new heaven and the earth. It's all about perspective. Come to the next slide. You see, it depends how far away you are. Things which may look like they're a long way away are actually quite close, and things which are quite close are actually quite far away. Next one. So, sometimes with prophecy, you're looking at one prophecy which is talking about two different times. Some things are in front of you, some things are a long way away. And the next one? We can't always tell what we're looking at. And the amazing thing, I think particularly about this section of the prophecy of Isaiah, but so much prophecy, it can be fulfilled not just at different times, but at different times at the same time. So sometimes we will see prophecy fulfilled at the time of Isaiah and the time of Israel. And then we will see that prophecy more completely fulfilled when Jesus came and walked this earth. And then we will see the same prophecy completely fulfilled when Jesus returns at the end of time. So prophecy can be at different times, in different places, and it can be the same prophecy can refer to different locations. It's almost as God is building up, saying, you see a bit in the life of Israel now. You see even more when Jesus comes. And that is just a taste, a foretaste of what it'll be like when Jesus comes in all his glory. So every fulfillment we see now is looking forward to the final fulfillment when Jesus creates the new heaven and the new earth. And for us, we are the people of God. The Apostle Peter puts it like this in these very well-known verses. You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. So I know there are different theologies. I am convinced that the whole sweep of Scripture is looking forward to a time when God will create a people for himself. He did it with Israel, looking forward to the time when he does it with the church, which encompasses people throughout the world joined together. We are a people of God. So what is Jesus the Messiah saying to us? Next slide, please. Well, first of all, he says he binds up the brokenhearted. We see that in Isaiah 61. He says, He's come to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. Then down into verse 3, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. Think of that situation I talked about. The city is in ruins. Some people are left living amongst the ruins. Others are miles away in a foreign land, abandoned by God. Think of the despair. Think of the lack of hope there must be. Come to the next slide, please. Ruth already prayed about refugees. Maybe it was something like this. I don't know. We don't know the full situation. They would have settled down, built houses. But many of them would be living in a life, where's home? I'm far from home. Do I settle down? Do I make a life for myself here? But this isn't my home. My home is back in Israel, back in Jerusalem. And there would have been that spirit of despair, almost of mourning. And we see those words in this prophecy, talking about grief, talking about despair. But the image is the Messiah comes and he comforts his people. And he says, I love the phrase, he will bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes. Now, ashes were a symbol of mourning, meant you were suffering loss and you were suffering pain. And you'd rub the ashes on your head as a symbol of your despair. And what God says is, he will take away that despair. And where there are ashes showing that you're in mourning, there will be a crown, a beautiful crown, a crown from God. The very place where we suffering mourning will be placed with glory. And the whole image is through this, of God taking despair and turning it into hope. Now those listening, to those who Isaiah was speaking to, those who heard the words of Isaiah afterwards, they would have been thinking about Jerusalem. And God did send his prophets to comfort his people, did send Isaiah to comfort and say, words of comfort that God has a plan for you. But I know that God had a bigger plan. God had a bigger plan. God came in Jesus to truly bring comfort to his people, to bind up the brokenhearted, to those who were hurting. Again and again, Jesus came to those who were suffering and in despair and were abandoned by society, to lepers who thought they had nothing, who were pushed out of their communities, living on the fringes, and Jesus would come out and he would touch them and talk to them. He brought comfort to those who were suffering. He bound up those who were brokenhearted. Now, we live in a time of despair. Next slide, please. This is from the Prince's Trust. Amazing statistic. 21% of young people think that their lives will amount to nothing, no matter how hard they try. We live in a time of plenty. We live in a time of relative peace. But still, there's despair amongst young people. They think there's almost nothing worth living for. That whatever they do, one in five think, however much effort they put in, there is no escape. Come here to the next slide, please. Here's a quote from the chief executive. This report highlights a staggering deterioration in young people's confidence in themselves and in their future. The cliff-edge decline in young people not feeling control of their lives echoes conversations we have every day with young people who speak of their fears about finding work, taking short-term jobs over long-term careers, and the knock-on effect of heightened uncertainty in the economy. Jesus came to bind up the brokenhearted. And I don't know people's situations here. I don't know what you're facing. But I know a good percentage will be struggling. It may be with family relationships. It may be with bereavement or illness. It may just be, and I feel this sometimes, just life. Life is so full and so difficult. You think, life is just tough. And Jesus comes to bind up the brokenhearted. But I think God has an even bigger plan. because one day he will truly comfort his people. And this is back to what I was talking about, the prophecy being fulfilled in Christ, fulfilled at the time of Isaiah, fulfilled at the time of Jesus, and will be fulfilled one day when there will be perfect comfort. We sang earlier in that song, it said, there we'll find our home, our life before the throne. We'll honour him in perfect song where we belong. He'll wipe each tear-stained eye as thirst and hunger die. Jesus is going to take away everything which pulls us down, all the despair and the mourning in our lives. As he says later on, in Isaiah chapter 65, says, I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. I promise, weeping and crying will be taken away. Or in the book of Revelation, very well-known verses again, where it says, he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has gone away. God will come to his people. He brings us comfort now, which is just a foretaste of the comfort his people will receive in the end. Next slide, please. So, Jesus binds up the brokenhearted. He also releases the prisoners. Let me see this again in these verses in Isaiah 61. He says in verse 1, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. People are taken away to Babylon. They're basically prisoners. They can't return. And Isaiah says to them, one day you will return. And they did. The proclamation of Cyrus meant that under people like Ezra and Nehemiah, the people of God could return to the land of Israel and to Jerusalem. God fulfilled it in his people of Israel, but he also fulfilled it in Jesus. God had a bigger plan. Jesus came, and he did release those who were prisoners. Those who were struggling with illness, he set them free. Those who were affected by demons, he released them. Jesus brought in God's release. He proclaimed freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. And God is still at work through his people today. Next slide, please. Here are just three slides of situations around the world. In the top right there, that's Asia Bibi. Many of you will be familiar with that. She is literally a prisoner. In Pakistan, she was accused of blasphemy under Pakistan's very harsh blasphemy laws. It really sprang for a disagreement between her and her Muslim neighbours. She was the only Christian family in the village, and they thought that she's basically unclean. Being a Christian, they wouldn't even drink from the same cup. So when she drank a cup of water, they accused her of blasphemy. And she has been sentenced to death and has spent many years in prison. And God's people have been working for her release. And I think that if it hadn't been for God's people and human rights activists around the world, she probably would be dead by now. God's people working for her release. I don't know whether you've had anything from Tear Fund this year. Tear Fund's 50th anniversary. This is Burundi. She's the focus, and the black lady in the corner there. She's the focus of this year's 50th anniversary jubilee celebrations for Tear Fund. And she was born in poverty, and she had no future. She just thought she'd have to marry the man she was given, and that would be the only thing she had to look forward to. Tear Fund able to work, come alongside her, give her training and education, and she set up her own business, and is now not only supporting herself, supporting her family, and has become a role model for her community. And she's been released from poverty. And in fact, it's more than that. Tear Fund are working where there's unfair, unjust laws, where holding her back, the expectations and societal pressures on her that she couldn't get free from. They worked with her and set her free from those. And now she's able to demonstrate what God can do in someone's life. And in the bottom corner, bottom right there, that's Neville. Now, some of you have heard of Christians Against Poverty, CAP. They work from those who are in debt. And debt come upon so many people. I heard just a few weeks ago, someone talking about someone they knew. She was a GP, and her husband died. And she hadn't really looked after the money. Her husband had done all that. And then she found that he hadn't been totally honest with her. And they didn't have the money that they thought they had. In fact, they had debt. And totally unexpectedly, someone, a professional in a well-paid job, suddenly found struggling with debt. And debt is a terrible, terrible thing that it holds you back, grips you, and you feel hopeless and in despair. Through the work of CAP, Neville Rousset, he's been set free from debt. He's now debt-free. And there's a little video. If you go on the CAP website, they've got a series of videos of people who've been helped. And he's great to listen to because he's so full of joy about being set free and so full of what CAP have done. And he's walking with God as well. Fantastic, fantastic what God's people are doing. Now, we continue the ministry of Jesus in the lives of the congregation here and in the world around. And I don't know whether it's through your time or through your money or through your prayers, but you can carry on that ministry of Jesus to set people free, to release the captives, to proclaim freedom from those living in darkness. That's what we're doing. And I don't suggest that we do everything. Sometimes it can be so overwhelming that there's so much need. We think, I don't know where to start. Just start with something. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be world-changing. But I can promise you that it will change somebody's world. You may not be able to change the whole world, but you can change the world for someone. So, opportunities there. And of course, above all, we have the hope of the gospel. Paul, in his letter to Romans, puts it like this. He says, Romans chapter 8, He makes a point that we are all slaves to sin, but we have been set free by God. We were in captivity. We were unable to live our lives properly. We have dragged off to do things that we know are wrong. And God sets us free, and he offers that to the world around us. Hope, release, fullness. And one day we will be fully released. We will be in his presence, and sin will be cast off, and death will be no more, and all that this world seeks to drag us down with will be gone. It will be completely fulfilled. We will be completely free. Next slide, please. And finally, just very briefly, we're going to look at Jesus the Messiah. He binds up the brokenhearted. He releases the prisoner and he restores. Isaiah chapter 61, verse 4. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations. Next slide. If you've been to a war zone or you've seen pictures of a war zone, this is what it's like. This is Syria. A city devastated by war. And that's what Jerusalem was like. The ruins are there. And talk about ancient ruins, long devastated, devastated for generations. Is there any hope? Can God possibly do anything here? And of course he did. When Nehemiah came back, he restored the walls of Jerusalem. When Ezra came back, he restored the spiritual life of the nation. And Nehemiah also worked on the social life of the nation, restoring God's law so that Israelites behaved properly to each other. And that's the plans God's got. He has got bigger plans than rebuilding Jerusalem, bigger plans than rebuilding the social, religious, physical fabric of Jerusalem. He's come to rebuild a world. He's come to rebuild God's people. And so God restores. Jesus, the Messiah, brings back things to where they should be. That's restoration. Bringing them back to where they should be. He restores our relationship with God and our relationship with each other. I think you see something of that in verses 5 through to 6. Isaiah goes on to say, aliens will shepherd your flocks, foreigners work your fields and vineyards, and you will be called priests of the Lord, and you will be a ministers of our God. You will feed on the wealth of nations, and in their riches you will boast. Now, you can read it like this. That's sort of a very Jewish-centric, a nationalistic view of the world. It's Jews on top, the rest, which is probably all of us, below. But I don't think that's the case. I think this is much more about God's people coming together as one. Alec Motir, in his book, Isaiah, next slide please, puts it like this. He describes it in these verses. The picture is not of a slave state or second-class citizenship, but of glad cooperation, of former aliens taking their place in the life of the people. We are all coming together. And this is about God's people being reconciled. So what the Paul calls the dividing wall of hostility has been broken down, and Jews and Gentiles, all of God's people come together. And that means us. We are brothers and sisters. Because of Jesus' death on the cross, we are brothers and sisters. And that means we're in relationship with each other. Now, I don't have any brothers or sisters, but I have got children. And I know brothers and sisters don't always get on. There can be little conflicts and difficulties. That's probably true for us, brothers and sisters in Christ. You don't choose your family, and you don't choose your family of God either. And we're all different. But that is the beauty of the way that God restores our humanity. We are separated from each other by our sin and guilt and selfishness and pride. And God breaks those down and builds us into a relationship. And that's my plea for each one of us, that when you look around, when you look at each other, think, they're my brother and sister. And God's vision is that the dividing walls between us should be broken down and we should be one. And one day, God has even bigger plans. Because one day, he will restore everything, bring it back everything to what it should be. He talks about it, Isaiah talks about it in chapter 66, when he talks about the 65, the new heavens and the new earth. Behold, I will create a new heaven and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. And carrying on the same verses I read in Revelation earlier. Then I saw a new heaven and a new... Sorry, next slide, please. A new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for a husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. That's where we're heading. That's where we're going. Isaiah was looking forward to a time when God would work in the life of Israel. God would work in the life of Jesus when he came for the first time. And God would work when Jesus returns. The new Jerusalem, the new heaven and the earth, everything will be restored and made new. The brokenhearted, there'll be no more mourning. Those who are prisoners, they will be set free. Those whose lives feel like they're in ruins or struggling, they will be restored in this wonderful city that God is looking forward to bringing when Jesus returns.